Hello, Joel here. I've got a new book out. It's called Be Funny or Die: How Comedy Works and Why It Matters. And it's about how comedy works and why it matters. Why human beings tell jokes, and then what that tells us about being human beings. So if you're a human being and you enjoy laughing and then want to know what the hell's going on with that, it's probably a pretty good book to read. It's called Be Funny or Die. It's in shops. You can buy it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome to Rule of Three, a podcast about comedy. I'm Joel Morris.
I'm Jason Hazley.
And as usual, we're joined by someone who makes comedy to talk about something funny that they love. By taking it apart, maybe we'll learn something about how comedy works, or we'll just quote bits from it and giggle until we're finished. Both approaches are valid. Our special guest today is the magnificent Charlton Brooker.
Hello.
Hello, Charlie.
Hello, Charlie.
How are you?
Yeah.
Guys?
Nice.
This is good. This is good. Like, obviously, people listening to this can't see this, but we're huddled around three. Are these called baffles?
Yeah, yeah. Mic baffles.
Yes.
It's a bit strange. It's like, what I was saying earlier, it was like we're playing a futuristic game, but this is like being in a foxhole.
They do look like pieces of torture equipment as well, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they can close on you.
Spikes on them.
If you swear, this will close on your face.
Okay.
Like an Iron Maiden.
I'll bear that in mind. It's also making my eyes go a bit funny.
You can look away from them. Close your eyes. While doing
all right.
like a disapproving maiden aunt. Okay. We've been trying to get this one running for ages, and you've been sort of dead busy doing Black Mirror and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when we first suggested coming on, and you sort of I know exactly what I'm going to do, and then you suggested a second option, which we're not doing today, which I keep thinking about because it's such a brilliant idea, which is you were going to do RoboCop.
Yes. RoboCop is a very funny film.
Well, I just think that's a fascinating thing to bring. I'm really looking forward to doing what we're doing today, but I'm kind of regretting we're not also doing RoboCop.
Well, maybe we could do RoboCop. I reference RoboCop a surprising amount in Black Mirror meetings and
really?
Discussions. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of things I like about RoboCop. And, of course, it's, like, spiritual sequel Starship Troopers.
My immediate reaction was, oh, that's not thought of as a comedy movie. Mm-hmm. And then I suddenly thought, because obviously you started off doing comedy and you're known for comedy, and Black Mirror, people went, is that a comedy? And then I went, if you understand RoboCop is a thing you'd bring on this,
yes.
I think it completely recasts Black Mirror in that sort of Verhoeven dystopia thing. And I don't think I'd quite got that about Black Mirror before, how RoboCop it was.
It's sort of I think it's because the 15-year-old me, I must have been 15 when I saw RoboCop, and I watched it about 1,000 times. That was one of the first things I had on video.
Yeah.
That I sort of, I can't remember if I think I must have bought it like secondhand from a video shop.
Yeah.
And I watched it again and again and again obsessively, and I just love the tone of it. It's still now, the fake news reports in that still hold up,
yeah.
I think, as funny and strange
news
and the adverts.
Hasn't changed enough.
Pakistan is threatening my border.
That's it, Buster. No more military aid.
Nuke 'em. Get them before they get you. Another quality home game from Butler Brothers.
Three dead police officers, one critically injured. Police union leaders blame Omni Consumer Products, OCP, the firm which recently entered into a contract with the city to fund and run the Detroit Metropolitan Police Department.
And which does segue neatly into what we are talking about, today because there's like a similarity there.
It's a parody and a pastiche. It understands the language of the things it's parodying really well. There are different ways of doing comedy. Mm-hmm. And the same comic impulse can give you something absolutely ludicrous and farcical and Blackadder, but it can also give you something sort of dark and odd and questioning and troubling, like Black Mirror.
Yes.
And it sort of seems to be Robocop appears to be sort of this little sort of focal point in the middle of that. You go, now I get it.
Yeah, I think it's a comedy that people don't realise is a comedy, as is Starship Troopers. Yeah. There's a playful unpleasantness at the heart, and a weirdness. There's like deeply weird things go on in Robocop. I hadn't thought about it. Now I wish I'd watched Robocop.
Oh, I'm sorry for
I haven't seen Robocop in ages.
Have you seen the remake?
I refuse to watch it. Does he look like a Power Ranger?
Oh no, it's kind of cool. There's lots good about it, but they take it quite seriously in the remake,
right?
And what it means is that halfway through you realise you're watching a disabled man recover, and because it's not got that fun and that blackness, right. You go without the comedy in it. You go, this is just a really injured man who's got prosthetics.
That's a bit like what's the Dark Knight movie where he's basically Batman's just got a bad back for the whole fucking film. It's just moaning, it's just going, oh my back. Oh no, my back hurts. Oh, boom, fear me. Lying down. It's a fucking, that's the most boring premise you could think of for a Batman film.
Batman.
Yeah. Get up. Fucking prick.
Terrible.
Was it The Dark Knight Rises? Because he doesn't. He fucking doesn't. Exactly. He fucking sits there when he. Oh, God, it's boring.
But it's when you take these things sort of too seriously, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's possible without that lightness of tone. Everyone sort of forgets Black Mirror started off with Prime Minister fucking.
I'll tell you who doesn't forget that. The Americans.
Don't they?
No, because they quite often warn each other not to start with that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, well, it's. So I think if you've never seen Black Mirror before on Netflix, it defaults to starting with episode one of season four, which is one of our more recent ones, obviously. Yeah. And that's partly because you don't need to watch them in order, so you might as well start with a new shiny one.
Yeah.
And also because I think Americans in particular don't always know quite how to react to the national anthem and don't see the comedy in it at all often. I mean, it is it's a weird tone, that episode.
They want me to have sex with a pig.
Live on television this afternoon.
But I think over here, I forget that when it went out, it was like 2011, people didn't know what it was. Because the advertising campaign didn't tell you that the Prime Minister was going to be like, it's fuck a pig or the princess dies. It didn't say that. And there were really straight adverts that advertised it as a straight sort of political thriller.
Yeah.
And so quite a lot of people tuned in initially thinking this is going to be a gritty. Like, and then got in the first like 8 minutes or something, you're hit with that. And then it cuts to a commercial break. And I think but people sort of went, oh, right, it's like that. Ha 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 ha.
Right. Laughing out of relief.
Yes. So I think maybe one of the things we sometimes get a criticism of, which wounds me on Black Mirror, is when people, and it usually tends to be overseas viewers who maybe don't know the context of like me as with a comedy background and that sort of thing, where they go, it's a bit humorless. It's too earnest. It's like too serious. Or when there's something else that comes out and they go, oh, this is like a funny Black Mirror. And I'm like, well, I fucking pissed myself when we were making Black Mirror, so what's wrong with you?
You remember that one of the reviews of A Touch of Cloth, I think it was in The Guardian, and I think we all know who wrote it, said it had too many jokes in it?
People don't like that.
Yeah, I mean,
so you can't get anything right, Charlie.
No. So either no jokes at all. I mean, there aren't really jokes. And sometimes we do. When Black Mirror doesn't work, in my opinion, is when it goes too earnest.
Right.
Because it can go too earnest. But you can have too many jokes, I think. I think it's possible to have too many jokes, but only if you're not enjoying the jokes.
Yes.
Basically, if they're bad. True. There's some bits of what we're going to do. I'm acting like I can't say the name of what we're discussing today, even though
it'll say.
So I don't know why
the rule is you mustn't mention it by name or a buzzer goes off and you lose 10 points.
Should we see if we can get to the end without mentioning what it is?
It's like Macbeth.
There's a couple of elements in this that I find a little irritating, but like...
They're not your favourite jokes.
Which I just think, I wish that wasn't in it. But then it's that, but that particular element isn't for me. And there's about 1,500 different flavours of joke
I suppose with Black Mirror, you're talking about something where you either find the general idea and the tone. Again, again, like Robocop or something, that you find the tone blackly comic.
Yeah.
That it's an idea taken, it's a comic technique to take an idea to exaggerated lengths.
Well, and quite often, I suppose, what we do on Black Mirror is we're spoofing a genre. National Anthem was very much written as, when I was writing the script, I was imagining it was an episode of 24. Right. So it was the, it's sort of formatted like an episode of 24. I mean, it's literally, it starts with a terrible dilemma. And I mean, the one thing, there isn't a hero character running around. But other than that, I was literally thinking in terms of, there's a ticking clock. There's like ad break every like 11 minutes. And I sort of wrote it like that. And so a lot of the language that the advisors to the Prime Minister are using is sort of slightly deliberately a little bit over the top, like ultra serious sort of like, you know.
That's quite a good way of doing a portmanteau series. You can see where you go, well, this one's the romantic one, this one's the thriller, this one's the adventure serial.
What's annoying is that we keep going, oh, we haven't done a Western. Let's do a... Westworld. Oh, fuck. We did one that's like the Star Trek episode, like USS Callister, which is set in space. And that started out because we wanted to do one that was based around a musical.
Really?
It's evolved because I had thought, and I still think it's a good idea. Yeah. So I'm an asterisk. I'm copywriting this.
Yep.
The idea originally was like, well, how could we do a musical episode or something like that? How could we do that? It was going to be like a work bonding exercise, teamwork exercise. What they would do is they would put people in virtual reality and they'd all have to reenact Grease the musical. It was going to be based around Grease, but people were going to be assigned random roles when they went in, so you didn't know if you were going to be like John Travolta or like someone in the background going shoop de wop de wop. Like, so, you know, so, and you didn't know who everyone else was. And somehow that seemed a little bit high concept. And then it was like, well, what if it was Star Trek? Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, it's all a bit.
It looks similar. It's all the same bright colours and things.
Bright colours, yeah. You'd have to license all the songs. It would only really work if it was a very recognisable musical.
Yeah, that's true. And then you're in Wright's Hill.
I suppose the good thing about doing Star Trek is you can do something that looks like Star Trek without it ever actually being Star Trek, and everyone gets the references and the resonance.
Yes. Not that it is in any way Star Trek.
Of course,
I mean, obviously,
be.
I can't. After we did it, some people said that's like Star Trek. And I went, what? Really?
You've famously never seen Star Trek.
I've never seen Star Trek. I've never heard of Star Trek. I didn't realise it was two words until recently. I thought it was one word. Yeah. I didn't know what it was, and I assumed it was about something completely different.
I'm sure they're fine
about the wool industry. Is there a wool industry? I don't know what I'm talking about.
Apparently, wool shops are on the rise.
Is wool?
Yeah.
What, you mean rebelling?
Yeah.
That would be a nice... I'd be into that rebellion. When I was growing up, there was a shop sort of near me that sold wool and computer games.
Really?
Yeah, which seems like an odd combination, but makes sense, actually, because people's parents were going in for the wool. And their kids would also go, oh, boring, the wool shop. Oh, wait a minute, it's got Daily Thompson's Decathlon. Oh, So it's actually clever.
Crochet Pixel Graphics.
Yes,
they've got that similar link.
There is a real similarity. I don't think then people were into 8-bit, were they? They weren't during the 8-bit graphic era. No one cared. They didn't realise you could take those little blocks
and turn them
and
into...
put them somewhere else. It's basically mosaics, isn't it?
Well,
it's something Kunk says, actually.
They're all 8-bit graphics.
8-bit computer graphics.
But that's something that I think Brian Eno said that as soon as you, when you've got a piece of technology that's really frustrating, that it's not very good, you hate it. And then the moment it's superseded, you start romanticising it, like Super 8 film and Polaroid. Its limitations become really, really sexy.
I spend quite a lot of time emulating old computer games, and a lot of that is making them look right, which means emulating the look of a CRT television on a flat screen TV. And that's a real rabbit hole. I've been spending a lot of time emulating old computer games and curating a sort of collection of these things, and then realise this is basically the exact equivalent. I'm basically a middle-aged man with a railway set.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing. And going, it's like recapturing some... It's not actually about recapturing your youth, is it? It's about being a child god.
Yeah,
basically. It's about like, I've got all the computer games. I've got my own arcade, and I don't have to pay. And I've got Golden Axe. I've got it in my house. I don't play them. That's what's terrible. I don't play any of these fucking things. I just sort of look at them, and they're never quite right. So I adjust them. It's like I'm a Fritzl or something, like controlling these fucking things. Or it's like I'm Will Ferrell in the Lego movie. Yeah. That's the other thing I realised. Yeah. I'm like, stop it! Leave it alone!
It's perfect!
You'll break it! You'll break it!
Stop Don't enjoying
adjust
it!
Don't adjust the humbar!
It's a sort of toxic nostalgia that would lead you, if you weren't doing this, you'd just start a political party and be dragging us back to the 1970s. Instead, so this is less dangerous than that.
What I'm doing is submerging myself in irrelevant fucking nonsense. Because I've been ignoring the news.
That's very
I've been
sensible.
Ignoring the news. Because I'm not doing the wipe stuff at the moment. I don't have to look at the news.
Isn't it nice? So have you enjoyed the last couple of years? I've loved not having to watch the news for a couple of years.
Yeah, I really do like not having to watch the news. And when I do watch the news, when I catch the news, it's a bit like a sort of horrible repressed memory.
In the spirit of toxic nostalgia, let's just go back to when everything was all right and we really liked a film. Which film did you really like?
I said that I wanted to talk about Airplane, which that would be a surprise to no one who's listening to this because they'll have seen that.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit amphetamines.
You have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, Roger. What's our vector, Victor? I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
I must have been, it came out, what, 1980?
Yeah.
So now I remember seeing it in the cinema.
Really?
Oh, really?
I saw it in the cinema. Now, I'm not sure whether I saw it on its original release or not. I think
it's only a PG. You can go and see it.
Yeah, so
it's a bit saucy.
I think it was, would that have meant it was an A at the time, like A certificate? Because this was pre-PG, so there was like...
I think you can go, if a grown-up goes with you, you're allowed to go and see it.
There was a cinema called the Corn Exchange in Wallingford, which was near where I grew up. I would see, like, you know, For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah.
I think it was probably the same year. So you'd sort of see slightly saucy films starring Roger Moore. And then there were films where people would say shit. That's what I remember, is that you could go and see a film and people would say shit and you'd chuckle a bit, and it was a bit, there was an excitable frisson throughout the cinema because there were children.
Did it say that on the thing at the front of the cinema this week?
It says,
a film where the man says shit.
Someone says shit.
Certificate A.
They say shit, asshole is another thing that people could say a lot. But anyway, so I remember going to see it and it being rapturously received by the audience. Like, just, I remember people applauding the end of the film and applauding some of the actors. There's that bit at the end where it's a bit, you have been watching. And individual cast members were being applauded by the audience, which was something I'd never seen before. And also, I think it's probably the first time I had laughed in a cinema. I imagine. So I must have been about 9 or 10 when I saw this film.
Yeah.
And I remember finding it really funny. And I felt like I was seeing a sort of joke that I didn't associate with films.
Yeah.
And it was slightly naughty. It was slightly grown up. There were jokes I didn't understand, but I sort of did understand. Like the pilot being a paedophile. I didn't understand quite what was going on. I knew it was weird and a little bit scary.
Joey, do you like movies about gladiators?
That would have sailed right over my head, but I sort of also knew what he was getting at.
Well, do you know what their first draft line for that
wasn't
was?
It, have you ever seen a grown man's cock?
No, have you ever sucked a grown man's cock?
Okay, right. That would have been that surely would have been the PG rating out the window. Yeah.
That joke is a really good clue as to how this film was made, because I imagine the line, because it's based on a film that already existed. It's based on a film called Zero Hour, which they'd seen late night. They'd set a video to record loads of adverts because they were trying to make a movie out of old adverts to write sketches about. And they caught this movie, an old sort of disaster movie, and they ended up having to buy the script for $2,500. But what they're doing is they're talking over the old script like a bunch of mates who have had a bit too much to drink watching an old movie.
They're drawing dicks in the margins of the screen.
It's very like they're scribbling over it. The teacher's said something in assembly and you've turned to your mate and said, what if he'd said cock?
Yes.
It's that level of pure joke. But that line about, have you ever sucked a man's cock, comes off the line, have you ever been in a cockpit before?
Right.
I love the way you can see how their brains have gone. They've heard the word cock and like Beavis and Butthead gone, cock. And then about four drafts down, you get, do you like gladiator movies?
Put yourself in this man's place. Aboard a transcontinental plane, suddenly half the passengers, including your own son, are struck by a paralyzing, deadly illness.
This is Captain Wilson and our first officer, Mr. Stewart, and this is Mr. Stryker and his son, Joey.
Joey, here's something we give our special visitors. Would you like to have it?
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
You ever been in the cockpit before?
No, sir. I've never been up in a plane before.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
It's like coming up with the best back of the class
also,
joke in the world.
That is a bit like every comedy writer's room I've ever been in with. The first hour or
yep,
two
yep.
is like just people saying all the unbroadcastable things yep. before settling into what you could actually say.
Coughing up a fur yeah. ball.
So, but I mean, that's a very good point because it has an authenticity to it. It feels like a proper disaster movie because it yeah, is yeah. one. Because yeah. they literally took the skeleton for one
yeah.
and made it silly.
I want the weather on every kind of landing field on their side of the mountains.
I want the weather on every landing field this side of the mountains.
Any place where there's a chance to land this plane.
Any place where there's a chance to land that plane.
I just want to tell you both good luck. I'll keep your son with me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Doctor.
I want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
And you can see that when they make yeah. Top Secret after this, that they really struggle because it's a parody of about six different films.
Yes.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Gag for gag, but it's not got the rewatchability of Airplane because it's not a proper disaster.
You don't
movie.
Know what it is from looking at the poster.
Top Rock Secret, and roll, just, surf, war.
No.
Don't know.
And I mean, it reminded me of, because when I was growing up as a kid, there were the things I would gravitate towards were things like The Goodies.
Yeah. yeah.
Or I remember seeing End of Part One.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
David Marshall.
Yeah.
And then there would be repeats of Python and yeah. stuff, Not the 9 o'clock News. And all of these things were parodies. And they would break the fourth wall and they would do things. They would cut to an ident or they would just sort of yeah. run the yeah. credits halfway through. And they do all this anarchic stuff that I really loved, the fact that they were messing around with the machine yeah. I was watching it yeah. on was really exciting.
It's flattering and so, to you to say, we're going to keep breaking this yeah. and smashing it up.
And so Airplane felt like a British comedy to yes. me in many ways. It felt like a British piss take of an American film to me
yeah.
Because it was a type of humor I wasn't accustomed to seeing.
From the pulsating pages of history, from the dark and furious days of Imperial Rome, we bring you a story that shattered the world. A tale so gripping that they said it could not be filmed. A unique event in cinema history. Julius Caesar on an Aldous lamp.
I loved that growing up. And I used to get really annoyed when I watched a comedy film that wasn't like that. I liked Woody Allen and early yeah. Woody Allen, Mel Brooks, mm-hmm. Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
And I liked all those sort of those telly programmes that would take the piss out of everything. And then when you watched a film that was actually about someone actually being in love with someone or doing an actual spy mission. I'm just saying to you, when we were quite young, I went, this film's fun, it's not funny.
Yeah.
And there were lots of films that were, especially American films, that were fun but not funny. Their primary purpose was to raise a smile rather than just yes. keep doing jokes. And this was such an exciting thing to see, because it had that take the money and run, love and death, sleeper, every joke you can do. And then it broke the fourth wall as well, like a sketch show.
And it's interesting because they'd done the Kentucky Fried Movie, hadn't they?
Yeah.
Beforehand, which yeah. I saw several years later yeah. on video, not knowing it was the Airplane
yeah.
people. I haven't seen Kentucky Fried Movie in many, many years.
Neither have I.
What I do remember is last time I did watch it, which must have been about 15 years ago, it's lots of sketches and lots of parodies of different of commercials and trailers yeah. and stuff like this. Mm. Then it goes into a Kung Fu movie parody that lasts about 20 minutes.
Right.
25 minutes. And I remember the first time I watched the game really frustrated, thinking, this is going on for fucking ages. and then the next, then watching it several years after that, realising, oh, this is really funny. They obviously realised, hang on a minute, we can parody a whole movie. That's what they ended up doing next. And you mentioned that they had set up a video recorder to record old commercials because they were going to do another Kentucky Fried
they
movie.
They wanted late night that. Commercials because yeah. they were, I imagine, sort of Tim and Eric-y kind of thing. They wanted yeah. the shittiest, low-budgetest commercials to take the piss out of, because there's no point taking the piss out of really slick ones.
Yeah.
So they'd leave the thing on going late at night.
And then Zero Hour came
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
And you can totally see what's so clever is then just buying it.
Yeah.
And being able to remake it means you've got a structure so that all the anarchic stuff that's happening still is happening in a very rigid order.
Mm. Yeah.
Apart from anything else. And the stakes are very clear.
You've seen that movie before as well.
You've seen it, so you don't need to sort of know. It's interesting because I watched it again like at the weekend because
yeah.
I knew I was coming here. So I watched
it
again.
We warned you.
I did my homework. Yeah. And there's a lot of things that I didn't realise I don't know, but I often don't actually pay attention to what's happening in the plot of films. You know, you like, but a lot of people
don't. If you don't need to, you don't.
You don't sort of need to know. So I didn't really realise. Of course it makes sense, but I never thought about where there is that they're landing. Like, they take off in LA and they land in Chicago. But I always assumed they were landing in the same airport that they took. For some reason, it never. Like, no, they land in Chicago because, of course, they do. They're in the air for hours. So they. But that all of that sort of. So you don't need. Need to know, and they don't even bother making the Chicago airport. It's the same.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's the same airport. Yeah. Basically, you don't need to know all that stuff. But the plot mechanics have been worked out years before by someone else.
Yeah. Someone we had on, I think it was Rufus Jones, who said there's a great thing in comedy action movies of any sort that a little bit of dialogue that's got the sort of feel or the chew of, say, bounty hunting or gangsters or flying a plane. A bit of dialogue that's got a bit of technicality. You hear it as an audience and go, oh, they've got this.
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay. They're looking off that. I assume the plot's working. I won't listen to it too hard because they've said something about bail bonds. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that the chase has got a reason. Yeah. Or here, you hear the stuff, yes. The air traffic control dialogue's all taken from Zero Hour. So therefore you right. go, they've got this, and you don't ask any questions. So then you can relax and just enjoy the jokes, knowing that the vehicle is just travelling along on tracks quite happily. Yes. You don't worry about it.
It's an old-fashioned film that they're parodying. I mean, even then it was an old-fashioned film. It's and 50, the music and everything is sort of deliberately...
Elmer Bernstein, they got him in and said, write a B-movie score. Don't write a... None of your good shit, they said. Right as a B-movie, and he just collapsed laughing.
It's really good, isn't it?
The white zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only.
But it's
I assumed. You see, I didn't. I assumed it was an actual, like an old score that they'd taken.
No, he's doing pastiche.
He's playing the same game that they are.
Right. Yes.
And apparently, he just couldn't stop laughing. He thought it was the funniest thing in the world. So they got someone in who had done serious movies, which is what on Touch of Cloth.
Yeah.
You got a crew who made serious detective.
Yes.
Shows.
Because you want... So we all did. We all worked on Touch of Cloth, which is our Naked Gun.
Abrams.
When I say our, I don't mean Britain. I'm not like claiming it. I'm saying literally the people in this room. And when we first were sort of discussing Cloth, I remember thinking this is a real tightrope. Because you've seen so many shit airplane attempts,
basically,
where it's just not quite right. Or there'll be some good... It's just...
It's a very delicate tuning. Yeah.
And it's usually that it's too silly, is usually what's sort of going on. It's too silly or it's too crass or...
Yeah, it breaks its own reality, so you start worrying about the plot or don't listen.
Airplane is very clever. It looks exactly like... But it's also really stupid and crass as well. But it looks exactly like the thing it's parodying. It is the thing it's parodying because it doesn't break the rules too much.
Yeah.
It like that. There's a fundamental reality to what's going on.
They are
going to
crash and die.
They will die. Everyone on board that plane will die if Stryker can't land the plane.
Yeah.
So there's it's very clear. The stakes are very clear, and you understand that could happen on some level.
That makes the jokes funnier.
The plot
is
incredibly simple.
But what's good about the plot, because it's on rails and you can follow it, there's a bit in it, which I remember we talked about when we were doing Cloth, and we've talked about doing any plot for anything, is there comes a point where people stop laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you listen to the commentary on Airplane, Zucker and Abrahams and start giggling and going, well, I hope everyone's enjoying all these jokes, about an hour and 10, because there haven't been many jokes.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this morning, so there's a bit where the jokes stop being fourth wall breaking.
Right.
And all the jokes in the actual, when they're trying to bring the plane down, the stakes are really high and the music's up, they stop joking about it being a film. And everyone who's doing their silly lines, there are loads of jokes, but the jokes are all, I'd like you to know we're all thinking of you. But it's quite a high stakes line.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Stack, there's a brilliant line, he says, should we leave the lights on the runway? No, that's exactly what they'll be expecting. Which is a high stakes line, but from a wrong movie. But no one breaks the stakes for about 10 minutes. They don't do anything where it changes genre or anything. They stay in a plane.
Yes.
And it's really clever because you go, well, you must have... They did 30 drafts of this script and they edited it so well. They've taken out all the jokes that stop the audience being excited, but they left in just enough jokes for you to know it's still a stupid film. It's really clever.
So it's still
clever.
Felt.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
And also, of course, there's the form. You know, there's a lot of attention to detail in the form. And then the cast... were all recognisable, even to me. I think my memory is that even me, when I first saw this, sort of recognised quite a few of these people as serious people I must have seen, like on BBC Two in the afternoon in an old black and white movie, being bloody serious. And
Lloyd Bridges in Mission Impossible or something.
They play it all with such a straight bat.
They've got a sort of, I suppose as a kid, I would have recognised them as sort of almost an Adam Westy sort of Batman yes. cast. Mm. They are high stakes actors who are coming to mess about, but they don't even camp it up to that degree. But I always liked that straight bat that Shatner and Adam West played. You'd recognise them from, actually, you're right, Mission Impossible action stuff you watched as a kid.
Yeah. Did you, just little sidebar.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Batman was ridiculous when I was a child.
No, neither did I.
I thought it was really, none of the jokes landed with me, as in I just sort of accepted there
it
was
works
this,
on two registers.
The shark repellent bat spray. Yeah. I remember thinking that's a bit ridiculous, but thinking, bloody, that's a bit embarrassing for the Batman film. They didn't know that that's God, that's a convenient plot device, isn't it? Fucking idiots. Shark repellent bat spray. They think I'm swallowing that. But no, you're right in that it's, because I think that's because that was played so straight. My brain couldn't process it as a child.
You've definitely seen these actors doing high stakes drama in a thing your dad was watching or whatever on a Sunday afternoon.
2 more minutes. They could be miles off course.
That's impossible. They're on instruments.
And you know that they will have been laughing when they were filming it. I mean, it's interesting that we, so when we did Cloth, that was, so we tried to slavishly ape a lot of the things they did, the formula that they used in Airplane.
Yeah.
So what was the recipe? So they used an existing thing. So for the first one, we got a sort of existing plot Boris Starling. It was a Messiah. So Messiah, which was this, that miniseries with Ken Stott, which was like Seven. So it's incredibly depressing and bleak and hard. There's a Seven-style serial artisan killer going around. I think it was the storyline for Messiah 4.
Yeah.
And it was about somebody bumping off members of a jury, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
And so we took that plot. And my memory is it was more the plot than a full script.
It was. I remember seeing it. It was like a 4-page document.
Which sort of outlined. And we changed it a bit. But it was, I remember it was being, do you remember this? Do you remember like me constantly going Taliban? This is gonna be. We've got to be Taliban about this, which basically just means it can't get too stupid.
Yeah.
So it's still got to be basically a storyline about murders revolving around a jury, and the method of murder shouldn't be too stupid. It should be quite grim. It should be the because when you watch these shows, they're really enjoying how bleak and horrible the deaths are.
Yeah. Well, it was a big lesson for us because we came on board Cloth One sort of partway through. I think you and Dan Meyer had done a lot of the work on it before. And we came on quite late because we'd been working at the BBC on an almost identical show in a neighbouring office. And our one, we'd said, we'll make it slightly more, it was like a cracker, tagger kind of thing. But we'll make it a little bit lighter because it was a half-hour sitcom-y version of it. And we made it a series of ritual murders in the marmalade industry.
Right.
And every time we did a pass on it, we went, we can't bring the stakes up enough. Because even though people were really being killed, we worked that out. It was still just slightly too funny. And when we came on Cloth, we went, the brilliant thing with this is that the joke is that everything in it is very, very played straight. And on top of which you can lay a load of absolute nonsense.
Yes.
As long as people are really getting killed and
people
it's a real
jury. People are really getting killed in horrible ways.
Yeah.
And that the joke, in a way, there is that the show is enjoying that it's horrible.
Yeah.
Because that's sort of what they do, isn't
but
it?
That's totally Airplane. Because when they got, they said the key actor to get in was Robert Stack, who plays the pilot who's in air traffic control, the guy with the two sets of sunglasses. Who played a pilot in To Be or Not To Be, which we watched with Paul King recently.
Right.
Yeah, he's obviously played pilots before. He's very funny. They got him in because he was amazing at doing this very high stakes dialogue.
Yes.
And they said he was the, once they got him in, he set the tone for all the other actors to copy. He got the joke because he'd been in comedies with Jack Benny and things before, but he also was very good at taking everything very seriously.
Yes. And when we did Cloth, like John Hannah, who played, like, it was just a natural at being incredibly intense total conviction.
Do you remember
which
Jim,
is the other thing is that the,
do you remember Jim, who directed it, he used to shout before every single take, stop giggling everyone, we're going to win a fucking BAFTA. And that would get John in the mood.
I remember him saying, like, there's a scene where they go in to look at the shrine of Todd Carty.
Yes.
And he was like saying to them, you're going, it's child murder, you're watching, it's a terrible, you're looking at a terrible shrine of murdered children, it's serious, ultra dark. Yes, exactly that. It's BBC One, 9 p.m. on a Sunday. It's
it's Red Riding.
Serious.
New blood.
Yes, sir.
Question, murder's a lot like sex. Why?
Because there's nothing worse than walking in on your parents doing it.
Because some people are better at it than others.
Because some people find it easier in the dark.
Okay, describe the scene.
Unshaven, clothes on backwards.
He's on his stomach.
They don't always land the right way up.
Right.
Roll him. Oh, my God.
He looks just like you.
It's my brother.
Your brother?
My brother.
His brother?
His brother.
Your brother?
My brother.
But also, but John, I remember being on set and talking to Johnny and Saran, and both of them said, we haven't got a fucking clue if this is funny or not, what we're doing, because we're not giving comic performances. We don't know whether this is going to end up funny. Well, in the same way that the actors said on Airplane, didn't they?
Lloyd Bridges was worried about it, and he said, I don't know where the joke is, Bobby, to Robert Stack. Robert Stack said, laughed and went, we're the joke, Lloyd. Right.
Which is really nice. Sums it up. And another thing we used to say on Clarth was, you haven't noticed it's the wrong script.
Yes.
It's like, so you're, this is series 5 of Touch of Clarth, the very hard-hitting, serious police drama, but the wrong script has arrived and no one has noticed that it's a prank. No one here is in on the joke at all.
You're a machine. And then you sort of got, nothing can stop the factory.
Yeah.
Well, there's a thing of that in Airplane, where they've cast the people who would be in it.
Yes.
There's a lovely story about Leslie Nielsen's agent getting a call saying they'd like him to be in it. He'd mainly done straight roles before. And he said, so when are you filming? Tomorrow. And they went, no, in a couple of months. And they went, no one's ever phoned Leslie this early. He was always the last minute replacement in things. And he was so flattered to have been phoned with a couple of weeks' notice.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Brilliant in it. It's interesting that in Naked Gun he starts gurning, basically. Yeah. That he starts ignoring the thing that made him brilliant. I mean, not entirely, because he's still, you know, he's still...
We watched Police Squad and then watched Naked Gun when we were doing Clarth. And in Police Squad, he's a serious cop. He's the best cop in the business. And when you watch Naked Gun, he's Clouseau. He's a clown, and they know he's an idiot. Lots of pratfalls and things, which I suppose makes it more international and makes
more filmic. Well, they cut to people. They do that thing, which they do a little bit. They do it occasionally in Airplane, but I guess maybe they get away with it because it becomes the exception that proves the rule rather than a new rule, which is where they'll cut to somebody being bemused by the silliness of something that just happened. They occasionally allow people in the film to acknowledge that it's stupid, and they do that a lot more in like The Naked Gun. Like there'll be people, you know, he'll say something crass or idiotic and it will cut to somebody sort of pulling a face.
Well, it's like Funny Men and Straight Men, but the whole point in Airplane is that everyone's a straight man, apart from Stephen Strucker, the guy in the air traffic control, whose performance is from a different film.
Well, so he is the one that annoyed me.
Chief, this weather bulletin just came off the wire.
Johnny, what can you make out of this?
This? Well, I could make a cap, or a brooch, or a pterodactyl.
Really? Yeah. Now.
Can you two fight?
Because okay, this was good to disagree. But now, quite clearly, when I first saw Airplane, maybe this is partly because I saw it in a cinema, that people were really laughing at him. So he's Johnny, the crazy guy.
Yeah, the flight controller.
In the air traffic control, who says crazy stuff, who is completely in a different film.
He's in a totally different film. They got him from their sketch show.
Yes.
And they just liked him. He was just a very silly, big, broad performer. Mm. And I've got the script. I was looking at the script while watching the film the other day.
Mm-hmm.
He is, first of all, he's not called Johnny in the script. He's called Eddie. Secondly, he's got hardly any lines.
Right.
And all the stuff that Stephen Stucker is doing in this film, he threw in.
Right.
So he's not even working from the script.
So he's subverting a subversive film from the inside.
But also, what I like about him is that you mentioned jokes that you don't get. There is the line, and Leon's getting larger.
Yes.
I think about that line at least once a week because I've got no idea why it's funny.
The fog is getting thicker.
And Leon's getting larger.
Well, weirdly, you see, this is the thing. So when I first... when I first saw it, I remember people really laughing at him and me being a bit annoyed by his presence and thinking...
that's justifiable.
Thinking he's breaking it. Yeah. What I like about this is, on some level as a child, I was enjoying the fact that the film was just a sustained... do you know what I mean? It was very straight.
It was funny because it was straight.
Yes. And then because he knew... he was so stupid, it was annoying me. And it was annoying me that he was getting laughs.
Yeah.
Like, I was quite cross
about
it.
He's not playing the game.
And I thought, this is... he's spoiling it. And I've held on to that thought for many, many years. When I watched it this weekend, Leon's getting larger made me laugh. And also Clarence Over's wife, who shows up, who is sleeping with a horse.
Yes.
When they wake her up.
It's worth listening to the director's commentary on that, because they go, how do they get a horse to lie down?
It's not just the right time, like it's getting up for
it's a coffee.
Horse. Like it's woken up and needs a shit. She's called into the air traffic control to stand there and look distraught. And Johnny, Stephen Stucker, just goes, oh, where did you get that dress? Awful! Like, in a way that really made me laugh this time.
But I think by that point in the film, you can watch it, the sort of film structurally, it's got the structure of a disaster movie.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the way it lets its jokes drop out, they change his tone throughout. So you get to point, by the time that the air traffic control turns up, you'll accept Stephen Stucker because they've said the rules are, this is really solid. And then obviously they pull him out at the moment when you need to take it seriously. They're quite clever at putting in...
You say that, but I didn't accept him.
Oh, you didn't accept him.
I didn't accept him. Now I accept him. Yeah. But I don't know if I accept him now because I didn't like him and now I've mellowed.
Is it like getting into a favourite track on an album you didn't like before?
Yeah, it's like, actually, now I see what he's doing.
Yeah.
See, now I actually appreciate what he's doing.
It's clowning. It's pure clowning.
Before, I guess I was... why am I talking like that? Yeah. But recently, you know, like the comedy nerd voice that people did in the 80s? Like, oh, hello, I'm a nerd. I've decided that's funny again.
Right, should we do the rest of this podcast like that?
I keep going, oh, well, of course, if you are. I think it's just because I'm old. And
your mind's going.
And doing the slightly... doing that one, going, I think you'll find these are my own shoes. I've decided that's funny.
Have you? Yeah.
So, you know, it was the announcer, the 80s sketch show announcer voice that used to be, well, the train now arriving at platform 4 is the... you know, that you heard in every sketch show. I reckon that's due a comeback as well.
It should be in the back of the paper next to the weather. These voices are now back in.
Which, and that does relate to it, because I did so much research, I actually read the trivia page on IMDb for this.
Oh, well done.
And so did you know that this is like a format point I'm introducing? Did you know? You need a jingle.
Yeah.
Can I pause for you to put a jingle in?
I'll put some music behind
this. Put a jingle in now. Charlie's Facts and Facts. Okay, so did you know that the announcers at the start going, the white zone is for whatever it is, are the actual announcers from Los Angeles Airport?
Oh, really?
That's the attention to detail. They went and hired the people who actually did the actual announcing at the airport. Charlie's Facts
and Facts. That's how you do it.
And that's, again, that's like...
That's casting Leslie Nielsen. That's casting the right guys.
And one of my pet hates when you look at one of my obsessions when we're making things is that it's got to look I hate it if like a newspaper front page doesn't look right, the font isn't quite right, or like
it takes you out of things,
or when you've got a reporter in something who doesn't have the intonation of a real reporter, so it's better to hire a real reporter to do it and ask them not to act.
It's almost like supporting buttresses. Mm. The reality is holding in nine places, so you can break it in one.
What's strange as well is just what you were, I'm just thinking about what you were saying about top secret, and that the problem with that is that you don't quite know what it is, basically, which is true. It's like it's all over the place.
But the jokes in Top Secret might even be better than an airplane.
Yeah, it's really funny. But you sort of, I remember I saw that in the cinema as well, and I don't think I was old enough to see it.
Lucky bugger.
I think I seem to remember that was the first film I snuck in to see.
Wow.
I haven't seen Top Secret in many years, but is that the one with the visual gag where the helicopter flies behind the sun?
No, that's Hot Shots Part
Deux. I've never seen Hot Shots.
Which basically is okay, but the last joke where a helicopter goes off into the sunset and flies behind the sun is one of my favourite jokes in any medium. That should be in the Smithsonian.
I've never seen that one because I assumed they got shit after sort of Top Secret.
They still do with occasional joke. But anyway, Top Secret's got the binoculars, hasn't it?
Over the
guard falls on the battlements and shatters.
Yeah.
Peter Cushing with
underwater
the big
fight. Yeah. The underwater western fight.
Big magnifying glass. Big telephone in the foreground.
Backwards scene.
Yeah, it's full of great jokes. And Val Kilmer's great. It's a very, very good film. But
you don't know what it is. Yeah. Now, so when I was watching Airplane, I realised what's odd is that the structure is so familiar and so simple and yet so rigid that you don't notice that actually it goes all over the fucking place. Like, it is a sketch show, basically. So the whole sequence, the Saturday Night Fever from here to eternity, what is that? That's straight out of Top Secret. That whole sequence is, I couldn't tell you what that is. It's like
they do a thing with sort of tribesmen, which I don't know where that's come from.
Yes, that I'd totally forgotten about that.
She's having a Tupperware party.
Yeah. Oh, Saturday Night Fever, by the way, a great bit of trivia. That is 10% faster than the actual song. They had to ask permission from the Bee Gees to make them higher.
I didn't go there that night to fall in love. I just dropped in for a couple of drinks. But suddenly, there she was.
I showed that sequence to my kids because I thought I can show them this. Yeah. They're like 6 and 5 at the moment, and they really laughed at the bit where Julie Hegarty is dancing, and the bloke she's dancing with gets knifed in the back. Yeah. And I remember that being. I was pleased to see them laughing at that because I remember as a kid thinking that's a really good old fashioned gag, but it's also nasty.
Yes,
it's a man basically in agony, dying, trying to indicate that he's been stabbed in the back, and the person he's dancing with thinking it's a disco move that she must replicate.
Well, there's a little edge of sort of violence in it that's very, very funny. I rewound to rewatch, you know, the slapping the hysterical woman scene where they queue up to slap her, and Leslie Nielsen does too. When someone says, sorry, it's my go, he gets one extra slap.
That's really funny. That's really good.
If I have to go, quick, one more.
But it's because, so there's the whole from here to whatever you call the Saturday Night Fever section, which is basically Top Secret for 5 minutes or whatever. Yeah. And then, I'd totally forgotten about the bit where they go, where they're suddenly in sort of pith helmets, are they? Like explorers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally forgotten about that. But there's lots of sections as well which are just airport gags that they've just randomly dropped it. So there's that bit where there's like people going down a luggage thing,
yes,
which just occurs randomly at one point. And they must have just got all this stuff and they thought, well, where will this go? There's a lot of stuff like that. I mean, Americans have a lot of stuff generally about airports, don't they?
It's like a stand-up routine, isn't it?
Well, I was thinking this, that we don't, I guess as Brits, we don't go to the airport as often. Or certainly in the 70s and 80s, we probably didn't. Whereas they're always doing fucking jokes about airports because they use them like buses, don't they?
It's a perfect example of one of those films you saw as a kid. Hmm. And I hadn't seen a disaster movie. I certainly hadn't been to an airport by that point. And I think I learned about airports from this film.
From Airplane.
Yeah.
You're fucked.
I know.
Like, I had seen, I believe, in the same cinema that I saw Airplane, I saw The Towering Inferno.
Right.
Now, that must have been a re-release. And The Towering Inferno in the cinema was one of the was an absolute defining moment in my life. And I think I'd seen that by the time I'd seen Airplane.
So you knew the rules roughly for a disaster movie.
I think so. And I used to really love disaster movies when I was younger. They'd show them a lot, wouldn't they, in the sort of 80s on TV. They'd show like Earthquake.
Because if they get a lot of star power that way, you put it in the TV Times. But Telly Savalas and Gene Hackman are in it. But there's an odd relationship with this where you watch this and it's got, because this plays a straight bat, it immediately reminds you of other films you've seen, like whether it's black and white movies in the afternoon or disaster movies. And it doesn't remind you of other 70s comedies very much.
No.
Because the interesting thing about the production of this is the original studio they went to wanted to cast it with exactly who you'd expect.
Right.
So they wanted Bill Murray in it. I think one wanted Dom DeLuise to play the Leslie Nielsen part.
Gotcha.
And you suddenly get this vision of a Cannonball Run version of this that's all antic and manic. Mm. And that's exactly what comedies were like at this point. What feels great about it is that it's sort of brown and a bit hard-edged. And even though they're being really silly, it's against this very formal, very austere. Apparently, they made it by taking the VHS of Zero Hour down to the set and looking at it and just copying the lighting, which made it affordable because that was a cheap movie, so they could just light it the same way. Directorially, everyone's in rigid lines.
Yeah.
It's the first film they've ever directed. So if you look at it, as a piece of comedy staging, everyone's always sitting next to each other, which is great for comedy because you get everyone's faces. So they're all in rows, and then when they're in the front of the plane, they're in rows, and then the air traffic control, they're in rows. It's a great way of accidentally simply directing a movie that looks quite austere. It's not full of manic jumping around. It's great.
And manic jumping around works if in a comedy of this type, if the thing you're mocking is manic and jumping around and you take the piss out of it. Like that, have you seen the clip of Liam Neeson jumping over a fence? Have you seen that from Taken? There's a clip of Liam Neeson jumping over a fence from Taken that uses something like 46 edits in 5 seconds or something. I'm sure I must be exaggerating, but it's like an insane, it's worth having a look at. It's like a textbook example of him, he's jumping over a fence, that's all he's doing, but they've really tried hard to make it very exciting and they use way too many shots. You Google it. So, and I can imagine parodying something where you kind of do that, but then you'd have to understand that that's what you were parodying.
Yeah.
And so Jim, when we were doing Touch of Cloth, he would sometimes bring in, there were things he wanted to do, like so, and he got better and better at doing it, where he wanted to do things that were all in one long shot.
Steady,
because they would do a sort of slightly showing off bit. There's one bit in the first Cloth where I actually get sort of motion sickness when I'm watching it. It goes round and round. And like there's a point at which it actually is really uncomfortable. I know what I was going to say, which is when you were saying about how it didn't feel like other films from the 70s. So I recently watched, there's a film on Netflix which is about the guy who founded National Lampoon. Doug something?
Should we look it up and then what we'll do?
Should look it up.
We'll sound really authoritative, hang on.
By looking it up.
By looking it up.
So I was watching this film on Netflix about Doug Kenny. I didn't Google that. I just knew it. He's the guy, one of the co-founders of National Lampoon. And there's a film about him. I found the character a bit obnoxious, but there's a good bit in it where he's made Animal House and it's been a massive hit and he's taken loads of cocaine and like gone off the rails. And then he gets very cocky and he starts making Caddyshack. And they're making Caddyshack with Bill Murray. And while they're editing it, or something like that, he goes to the cinema to watch Airplane. And he watches Airplane and he's immediately immensely depressed. And he sort of comes out going, Caddyshack is shit. compared to that. And it actually fucking destroys him as a person in this movie. He spirals into a massive sort of alcoholic
Airplane
depression.
Is exactly what he should have been making. Because that was what National Lampoon was.
Exactly.
National Lampoon was astonishingly precise parodies of Life magazine and things. It looked exactly right. There's a thing I was noticing watching this and imagining a version of it that had Burt Reynolds and Bill Murray in it.
Yeah.
And thinking of that and going, what that would look like if I watched it would be like everyone had a brilliant time making it. But I wouldn't necessarily have a brilliant time watching it. And the thing that's great about Airplane is there's a real feeling that they are doing this for you.
Yeah.
They're not doing it because they're obviously having a blast. Everyone's enjoying themselves. It's not cynical. But they've not put any of that on screen and expected you to say, I bet it was a hoot when we did all that cocaine and pissed about.
Because there is something quite joyless about a Cheech and Chong film, for instance, isn't there?
They're having more fun than you are.
Yeah.
If you're having more fun than the audience, I think you're on the wrong side, aren't you? Did you know the studio wanted Barry Manilow to play Stryker?
What?
Yeah, I know.
God. Has Barry Manilow ever acted in anything?
Not to my knowledge.
How would that work?
Not very well.
They would have gone into the disco scene and then not come out.
Right.
For an hour and
imagine
10.
The problem there as well is that you might have got a situation there where, because I didn't recognise it. I mean, I didn't know that like Robert Hayes was a comic actor. He was starring
in a sitcom at the time.
So and things like that, I'm slightly disappointed in a way when I hear that. I'm like, oh, that would that mean that if you were an American and you went to see this, you'd go, oh, it's the bloke from the comedy show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, but you might get a situation if it's Barry Manilow, that Barry Manilow was, you know, hugely famous and powerful.
Yeah.
And so what if you'd had a situation where he went, this isn't funny. Yeah. What if I just do this? What if I, I'll raise an eyebrow here or I'll go...
Yeah, I've got the feeling when you watch this that the writers, because they said they, after they did Kentucky Fried Movie, they said the only way to control our work was to direct. So this is their first thing. Yeah. Three of them directed it effectively. Apparently one of them did the ordering about and two of them got a monitor and watched
it. And I bet 80% of their job was just being Taliban about things and going, no, we can't do it now. It's got to look like this. It's got to, stop smiling. Don't do a double take.
Can you imagine how much they reined Stephen Stucker in? Imagine what he was like on the first take.
Well, weirdly, he's because he's allowed to, now I understand he's like on a Rumspringer, whatever. He's like gone, he's allowed to run around. But it, also, I suppose, no one else reacts to anything he says and does.
That's what's
so
fun.
That's the other
you're,
thing.
It's almost like you're testing them. You're putting a court gesture
only
in.
Now have I realised that, have I unlocked the... They're all seeing jokes I hadn't, that hadn't landed with me before that I saw. For some reason, so there's a joke where they're on the beach snogging and she goes, oh, let's go off down the coast or whatever. And he goes, oh, I can't. And he lists this, he goes, my orders came through. We've got to go into, I've got to fly over Rio Grande or whatever it is. And he lists every detail of the mission. And then she says, like, we're going in low, so they won't expect it. And she says, when will you be back? And he says, I can't tell you that. It's classified. I only, for the first time, only understood the joke. For you some only... reason, I'd never noticed. I'd been noticing that they were covered in seaweed.
Yes. Yep.
And thinking about that.
You only noticed the mirror gag this time round.
Yeah.
Didn't you?
What, the Robert Stack walks out of the mirror.
Because there's a guy being attacked by a dog behind him. It's quite distracting. And they've done a brilliant, like, Contact-style mirror reverse.
Yeah. There's quite a few things as well that I discovered later are based on, that are cultural references to things that we wouldn't have known.
Yes.
Mm. Like, so there's, like Jim never has a second cup of coffee at home.
Yeah.
So it's a line from an advert. Again, I was slightly disappointed when I heard that. It's like a... And apparently she was the woman in the advert that it was.
You're used to it as a kid. You'd watch the Monkees and the Banana Splits and
there's
Top
There's loads of lines. There's, like, film at 11 and stuff like that that they were doing, like... there's that point counterpoint. I like that. They bought their tickets. I say, let them crash. Yeah. Which is still relevant today. It's basically Katie Hopkins.
Yeah, yeah. I remember thinking of the line, give me ham on five, hold the mayo. Yeah. When he meets Dr. Ham and he's talking to the Mayo Clinic, I remember thinking, there's something in that line that I don't understand, isn't
The Mayo Clinic, I only sort of... Only this time watching it am I aware that the Mayo Clinic is a real thing.
Oh, is it?
Thing.
Is it?
The Mayo Clinic...
Well,
the Mayo Clinic is an American sort of health institution. Right. That's why there's Hellman's Mayonnaise sort of... Like, there's a whole wall of mayo behind him. It's just a stupid joke. But the Mayo Clinic is a real thing.
Do you ever think with this... your favourite joke is one that... So you went to a cinema to hear it, but I always liked, you sort of eventually rate some jokes that you go, I bet no one else got that. And when you watch the commentary, they say, oh, that never got a big laugh, we left it in. There's a couple of gags in there that I really like, the one where he's doing the painting of the guy rescuing the baby from the Jeep.
Yes!
And it's being painted from life. And the guy, because the first joke is that
the painting, like, is fucking mad.
Awful anatomy, like his legs behind his head. And they've got a contortionist in, so it's a completely accurate representation. That gag, I think, for ages was my favourite joke in it, because I used to watch it as a kid and go, I bet no one else liked that gag as much as I did. You could sort of own some of the jokes you went there for Americans and some of the jokes you went there for me.
Yeah.
But there were so many jokes, you could choose your favourites.
Also, that's an example of, you see, I think when I saw that joke, I reacted slightly different. So I thought that it's mad he's got his leg behind his head. But I thought it was, the joke was that it's a very disturbing painting. If there's anything, it's like a hilariously disturbing, because he's holding a baby upside down, firing a machine gun in the wreckage of a plane. That's a really funny thing for a disturbed pilot to be painting. Yeah. And then, so then they cut to the guy, the amazing contortionist. There's another moment that I'd forgotten about that is, again, a little, just a moment in it. It's very well observed, I think. There's a bit when it's coming into land and they do a thing where they go around the world, the different global newsrooms, you know, and they show, like, somebody going, oh, the plane is, it may crash at Chicago Airport.
This bullet just handed to me.
And they cut to a guy in Japan sort of saying it in Japanese. And also in the background, so in the, on the American one, a picture of a plane comes up, and the Japanese one, a sort of like Japanese painting of a plane. And then it cuts to, like, a bloke in, like, a grass skirt who's meant to be, like, I don't know, Polynesian or something like that. with like a xylophone type thing and two wooden sticks that he's going like he's handed the thing, and he's got a sort of like a carving of a plane behind him, and also he starts doing it, and then it cuts to another camera and he turns
and
around
he follows
and
it.
Delivers it down. The rest of the sort
the
of
full
Morse
grammar
code
of news report
down that into another camera. That's for the brilliant. Second sentence. was just like they didn't have to do that, but that's perfect. Very, very funny.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
What's lucky about Airplane as well, because it's sort of a slightly edgy. The jokes are supposed to be the most shocking thing you can say over a movie.
Yes.
What's amazing is how much of it has dated fine. You'd think we'd have lost more jokes, and some of the stuff they cut out.
True.
Luckily. I think probably wouldn't be in there, but the fact it's got paedophile
nice
gags and things in it, but they still work. It's not. It's got quite a good heart to it.
I mean, it is. You slightly go now. You watch it and you slightly go.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it was. It's easy to forget that paedophiles were generally regarded as funny in 1979. That it was like jokes about scoutmasters and
flashes,
sort of vickers and stuff, and it was all a bit. Yeah.
Isn't over reading modern sperm magazines?
Yes.
Actually, like, the art department deserves a bit of credit on this as well, don't they? Because, like, you know, the boy reading Nun's Life and the nun reading Boy's Life and all the things like the cod Spanish on the flashing
lights. I know, I
hadn't
noticed that the first
time. You smoker.
Put on your seatbelt.
Yeah.
Sit down now.
I like the no shagging sign, the lights. Yes. That's beautifully designed. No smoking, no shagging. It's great. But we used to do art department passes on Touch of Cloth, that once you fill the film with jokes, you can always get the art department to have some fun on top.
There's a joke. Now, here's a joke I definitely very much remember from seeing it as a child in the cinema and thinking, this is naughty. But also, I think that's a brilliant joke, and I don't understand why. And that's the bit where everyone panics. There's that shot of everyone panicking, and for no reason, a topless woman runs into the middle of frame and just jiggles her tits around. And then leaves. Or so is it just for no reason? It's like, you should watch that now and go, oh, that's a bit. Yeah. But weirdly,
it's so gratuitous. It becomes
it's so fucking stupid.
But it's almost a joke about the way that you do a topless scene in those kind of films to make them feel a bit racier. It's almost like saying it's having its cake and eating it.
I don't quite know what the joke is.
I remember
is
doing that gag in Touch of Cloth where there was a scene where Saran was going to get out of bed.
Yes.
And so we replaced her body double.
That, you see, I think that's very, because that feels like a different joke to me. I think the tits in Airplane is just like, for me, the joke, the reason I thought it was funny was, I think I just thought it's chaos. What they're saying is it's chaos on board. It's chaos, even more chaos. What's more chaotic? A pair of tits for no reason, like right in your face. And then in Cloth, I remember that was because we'd noticed. It's worth pointing out that, again, while we were slavishly trying to ape the Airplane formula, another thing we did was we taped
the real thing.
And I remember at one point there was a thing where it was, we realized it was best not to watch the full episodes of things, but to go, can we have all the crime scene sequences randomly in, like together, all the scenes where the detective is in a pub on his own, all the confession scenes together, because then they're devoid of context and they become even, you sort of notice, just seem to remember that we'd noticed whenever you see a woman waking up in a film like that, there would often be a gratuitous bum shot.
Yeah.
Sometimes they do it with blokes, usually with a woman. She like wakes up and you see an arse, and often it's a body double as well. And so, yes, there was that. That's one of my favourite shots in the whole of Cloth, is that we got
the
a guy
body double.
Also, what's good is that it's a guy whose his body is not so revolting that it's like that's the joke. It's just sort of
a
unglamorous.
Just a bloke.
Just a very average bloke. Sort of getting, I think you can see a bit of his balls as he bends down to put on the sort of the pants. And it's a bit, he slightly fudges it as he's getting them eyes.
But I remember writing out thinking, this is kind of a, I remember thinking at the time, this is kind of a double joke.
Yes.
It's an Airplane, going, if you're putting nudity in a thing that's meant to be a comedy, there's almost a way you're on a bound to either make it so ridiculous that you go, really, what a gratuitous
I think it's get away with a ball. It's it's definitely because the joke is clear, and it's just also it cuts back to it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It sort of cuts it cuts to Saran's face, and then it cuts back to the bloke leaving the room. Like we haven't noticed. It's the worst body double that's ever been employed. The person, the body double, didn't turn up, so they had to sort of get like
one of the
caterers.
they've got this thing where they're borrowing a whole of a film which you can nick stuff from. Mm-hmm. If you go on YouTube, there's a side-by-side comparison thing where it plays a bit of Zero Hour and then a bit of Airplane. You can see how they did it. It's great. I've got Zero Hour on DVD. It's okay. It's watchable.
Right.
But then what they also did is they watched every other fucking Airplane film they can do. And as you said, every joke about airports you can do. One of the reasons they didn't do Airplane 2 is they said, let's do a sequel. We'll call it Airplane 2. And they went, we've used every joke. Mm. It's 30 drafts they've written. They've written every joke you can do about airports. It's done.
Airplane 2 I also saw in the same cinema. And I remember being a little disappointed by it. I'm sure I wasn't aware why I was slightly disappointed, but it will have been because I didn't really know what it was about.
Yeah.
It's like a space shuttle all of a sudden. There are some really good jokes.
There's a good joke with William Shatner and a door.
That's the one everyone
remembers.
No, there's another really good joke in it, which so he's in the sort of, it's like Space Command type area, isn't it? And there's a bit where he walks past, there's two guys with a sort of big piece of equipment there with lights all over it, and he goes something like, have you worked it out yet? And they go, no, we don't know what it does. It's just this light that goes. There's just a light that goes backwards and forwards, and then sometimes this thing goes beep.
One of Zucker or Abrahams or Zucker said of Airplane 2, it's a parody of a thing that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
There isn't a going into space and it going wrong.
So is Top Secret, so he should have fucking... So well, it's four things that exist at once.
But you've stuck them all together. But I mean, again, that's flagging up the thing that maybe even they didn't know at the time, that the audience needs to have some very solid handrails if you're going to be this silly.
Yeah.
I mean, they claim they've never seen Airplane 2. They had nothing to do with it. You can tell when you go off-piste, you lose the audience really quickly.
There's a reason there was no Airplane 3.
I mean, you mentioned earlier on about loving sort of the goodies and sketch shows and things like that. And what's interesting about that kind of joke where everything's up for grabs, the Monty Python, you can do anything you like, Holy Grail kind of thing. There aren't many films that have successfully done that. And this is now regarded, I mean, it's critically, it's like 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's in the AFI's top 500 American movies. It's a classic. And maybe it's just because there aren't many of them. And when you look at the other people who do them, there aren't many of Mel Brooks's you'd put in the top 500 that are just gag, gag, gag. Mm. Gag, gag, gag films don't tend to be this good or this popular.
No, and they just got everything right. And I've never met anyone who doesn't like Airplane. I don't think I've met anyone who doesn't love Airplane.
Yeah.
Like, if you mention Airplane to anyone who's seen it, they go, oh, that's a brilliant... Like
you'd watch it if it was on. If you caught 10 minutes of it...
You sort of have to... You will enjoy something anew every time. And it's interesting that it's a real crowd pleaser. Like, it, by definition, everyone seems to love it who's seen it. Yet it contains such a mixture of gag in it. It's got very clever parodies. It's got ridiculous, like, just crazy, like, weird watermelons falling from the sky for no reason.
It's got some shit hitting a fan.
Human shit being thrown into a fan. And it's got, like, weirdly, you know, almost brass eye levels of sort of, like, eerie, like the pilot asking, you know, have you ever been in a Turkish prison? That's really abrasive. That's daring and strange and weird. And yet there's lots of stuff that feels like it could be in the Two Ronnies. It's sort of, it's Four Candles meets the Day to Day. That's basically what it is. And so it's, I remember being finding it incredibly exciting that you could make a film that was that. That was not something that had occurred to me. I'd seen the goodies and I'd seen sort of sketch comedies and things like that. And it never occurred to me that you could make, why not make that as a film? Because films are fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's weird that it doesn't happen very often. When it does happen, comedies have to be really flagged up, don't they? As this is a comedy. I don't like it when things have to have comedy in the name. The comedy about.
But after this came out, and obviously it was a huge influence on people, because everybody loved it.
Mm.
And it was made again and again. But within a few years, that form has been debased and demeaned to the point where, if you said to a film fan, do you like Airplane? Yes. Do you like Scary Movie? They'd go, oh, no. And immediately, the thing that it was doing, even Hot Shots, we all said, oh, I haven't seen that. Do you like Dracula Dead and loving it? Weirdly, the first one of these that really, really hits. And then no one ever does it again as well. And it still stays there as the original and the one no one's ever managed to hit.
The first Naked Gun was like, I remember that was a big hit. I'm sure I saw that in the same fucking cinema. I must have been locked in that cinema for years.
Someone let him out of the corn exchange.
I'm sure I saw... Yeah. The Naked Gun in the same cinema, and thinking at the start, thinking great, because it's got that opening sequence where the, you know, because I'd seen Police Squad as well, and the opening sequence with the flashing light going through the roller coaster and through a changing room and all
the jokes.
It's got lots of jokes, but then as the Naked Gun movies went on, it was like diminishing returns
as
the gurning went up. Yeah. There's still some good jokes in even the third one, I think.
Well, there's good jokes in most of these movies, but they don't have... There's something sort of rigorous about Airplane.
Yeah.
That sort of everyone starts misbehaving afterwards. It's because they've... As you said, the reaction is, I can't believe you can do this. I can't believe you can make a film like this. At which point everyone goes, well, you can do anything. Mm. And the thing, of course, that they found out is... You can't do anything. They did 30 drafts of this script. They used to record audience reactions to it onto audio and then edit based on what people... So it's been through a really rigorous testing process to say every one of these jokes has been tested. It was like sort of they started writing it in 74. It doesn't come out till 80. It's the best one of these because it's really been tested like a plane.
I just want to tell you both, good luck. We're all counting on you.
Actually, that does ring a bell, which is that but this was them talking about a joke that's in Naked Guns. There's that bit where the bad guy falls off a building. Like, he bounces off a flagpole and off an awning, and then he lands on his feet. Like, unexpectedly, he lands on his feet, and he's fine. And he sort of goes, oh, whoo, and then a lion... just from nowhere comes in and mauls him to the ground. Right, and I remember really laughing like fuck when I saw that, and the audience really laughing like fuck. And then years later, I read that when they their first test screenings, the joke didn't work,
right?
And they couldn't understand why the joke didn't work. And the reason the joke didn't work is they had included a shot of the lion jumping before, it had cut to the lion jumping before it mauled him. And once they took it out, it was brilliant.
So it's precision tool.
Because it comes in slightly inelegantly, and like that's partly why it's so unexpected, is that it's sort of the timing of it is not quite... It's just...
Someone's thrown a lion at it. But I suppose what it's got... Well, the way you describe that, the only place you see jokes like that pulled off as well now, probably The Simpsons, is animation.
Yeah.
Which is running at that airplane gag speed where you can throw... Mm-hmm. I'm now thinking of Homer falling down the gorge in that classic thing where...
Yes. I hadn't thought of that, but The Simpsons and Airplane are real bedfellows, aren't they, basically? Mm-hmm. Really...
But you talk to Simpsons writers, they're all big Mad Magazine fans, and maybe it's all to do with saying, we want to make comedy that feels as under the covers, thrilling and funny as Mad Magazine was.
It's that thing where it flatters you and amuses you at the same time, doesn't it? So like The Simpsons, when it does things that are very well observed, that you sort of feel like it's a private joke that somebody's making, like, oh, you've noticed that this is fucking ridiculous as well, haven't you? And this, it is ridiculous in this way, but I'm not going to make a big song and dance about it. I'm just going to sort of show you an example of it that's slightly turned up.
And we all agree, we're all in the club of people who regard this as ludicrous. And I suppose what Airplane is as a movie is it's a film that says, aren't films silly?
Mm.
And that's a joke that you go, oh, that's a bit subversive as a kid.
This is a very animation style. It's a shot early on when that woman is singing to when the stewardess starts singing to the sick girl.
Yeah.
And there's like people, everyone's smiling and leaning in and smiling. Yeah. And then there's like a bloke from no reason leans in from the top of the frame just so he could fit in another smiling person. That you get the joke, which is this is cloying and it's overdone and it's ridiculous. Without it, I don't know how that would have made sense on paper. Like trying to describe that joke. That's why they had to direct this film, because trying to describe that joke on paper would be very difficult.
Some would say, no, we're not having a guy in a harness. But again, on screen, again, they're treating everyone like cartoon, like bits of animation. They've got total control of the frame. And I suppose that the reason they don't make many of these films is that production method, where a bunch of stupid people who were giggling got complete control of production, and no one said no.
No one said no. They got everything right. It's straight. I think, it doesn't happen very often, and I don't know why, because it so clearly worked.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's a lot of fairly simple rules you could follow.
Yeah.
That you could compare what you're... I don't know. Maybe they're just brilliant at doing it. I mean, there's that.
Maybe that's our conclusion. We could come to the conclusion that the reason Airplane is brilliant is because it is brilliant.
Mm. Even the bits that I didn't realise were brilliant are brilliant.
Everyone is doing the right thing in it.
Yes.
They've made all the right decisions.
And they're I think it's to do with an obviously obsessive and innate attention to detail.
Yeah.
Because it's like, this isn't right until this is just so. And I suspect that's at the root of it.
Because the thing no one ever wants to say about comedy is it's not splashy. It's precise.
It's boring.
Yeah.
Like it's it's pedantic often. It's like really pedantic for a reason that you can't quite articulate. It's like you have to sit there. Chris does this a lot in Brass Eye, doesn't it? Like where the edits are so, the sound effect or the way it cuts from, you know, the degree of sarcasm that's being exhibited in the edit is so precise that it would be, you could not write that down. You can't sort of teach it to someone and it has to be something that an obsessive person has sat there and isn't happy and cannot leave until it's sort of just so, which in a way should be awful. Sounds awful, doesn't it? Sounds terrible.
Comedy is hell. It's just,
yeah.
You've got to, I suppose the hardest thing, why, I imagine maybe that's why this is rare, is to hold concentration and discipline for something which at any moment you're going to go, hang on, I've just edited a thing where some shit went into a fan. What am I doing with my life? I should go and make The Godfather. It's very rare for that level of precision to be applied to something which is throwaway and stupid and just meant to make you laugh.
It slightly reminds me, because I think a lot of the time, a lot of my job is about being a fucking pedantic, boring prick, basically. And so a lot of the time, so it's on the wipe shows a lot of the time in the edit, it's to do with, no, it's got to, well, hang on, no, another couple of frames. It's like literally like, and then on something like Black Mirror, often with the design of things, you're constantly saying, we can't do that. No, the computer, we've got to take that noise off because that computer wouldn't make that noise. Because when you have a computer, it doesn't go beep, boop, boom, bing, bing, clack, or it'd drive you fucking crazy. So you're like constantly being a killjoy in many ways. You're constantly sort of going, that's very interesting that you've designed this operating system for where everything spins around, but it makes it look unreal on some level. So let's make it really boring. and I think with a lot of the time, it's knowing when, they know when to do that in this. They know when to not do it. That's the weird thing. They know when to go fucking ridiculous. They get away with, like, the joke where she's sort of giving the autopilot a blowjob.
Yeah.
They sort of get away with because it's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
But really, if it was all that, it would be unwatchable.
Yes, that's a glimpse of how bad.
And they've earned a bad moment in a way by being brilliant everywhere else.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like the first, Leslie Nielsen's first entry, excuse me, stewardess, I think the man next to me is a doctor, and he's sitting there asleep with a stethoscope in his ears. And you go, do you know what? We'd all reach for that gag, but they've really earned it by then.
Yeah. You get all of them because you're in a safe pair of hands. It is, oddly, in a disaster movie, you know someone is in control and it's these guys because they've been rigorous. You know the film's not going to crash, so you let them do sort of bad taste jokes or jokes that are cheesy, things that would be in The Two Ronnies, basically. You let them do all these registers, so at the end of it you end up with a smorgasbord of comedy with all available flavours. It's a buffet where everything's there. So, of course, it ends up in the AFI Top 500, because if you're going to see a comedy film, it's a definitive comedy film. It shows you all the colours and tones you can do in a comedy.
Yeah, it's a fucking good workout, isn't it? It's basically a sort of, I'd be quite happy if all other comedy films were deleted.
Well,
I'd be quite relaxed about that.
That's decided. We're wiping everything else. That's a great point to finish. If we're going to delete all other comedy and only have Airplane, you get the Bible and Shakespeare and that's it.
Oh, RoboCop's just been deleted under those rules.
That's okay. It counts as sci-fi. Thank you for bringing Airplane. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Charlie.
Cheers.
I just want to tell you both, good luck. We're all counting on you.